of the Times is sponsored in part by Bob Johnson Insurance, an independent full-service agency featuring Erie Insurance products. Insuring over 1,000 churches and religious ministries in Kentucky, Alabama, and Tennessee, and even insuring those who attend church, too. If you'd like a personalized, no-obligation quote, you can call 865-922-3111 or visit them online at bobjohnsonins.com.
Meds for Stat has underwritten this edition of Signs of the Times. Meds for Stat is medications to prepare you for such a time as this. Meds for Stat provides access to medication kits containing an emergency supply of possibly life-saving antibiotics as well as other medications and a treatment guide. Go to medsforstat.com or phone 1-888-RX-4STAT.
Current events,
personal values,
political and social issues,
technology, wars and tensions.
Join us for the next hour to discuss and learn how the things happening in our world today point to God's prophetic word as signs of the times.
There's a friend of Iran that doesn't stick closer than a brother. We'll look at how Iran is changing, but their ideological troubles have come here to cause us trouble. We've got some troubling birth pangs to talk about. We'll also talk about some freaky tech and Franklin Graham in Peru. We travel the globe for you to piece together the signs of the times. It's our weekly review of Bible prophecies in the world's news for Friday, March 13th. 2026. You can listen or watch any of our episodes again. You can share them with your skeptical friends. You can read the articles we talk about, or you can ask Pastor Mark a prophecy question. When you visit the Signs of the Times section on thewaymedia.net, or just grab our Way Media app from the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store. And now here's someone who wants to know, if you're working from home, does that mean you're living at work? And that's Pastor Mark, who in his younger days started a band called 999 Megabytes, but unfortunately, they never got to a gig.
So, not bad.
Little computer joke.
Yeah, no, I had the old garage band growing up.
Did you?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, mostly what I heard was, hey, you kids, be quiet out there.
Yes. That was your audience.
Yes, that was our audience. Thank you. We're here all week.
That's right.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Tip my mother. Yes. Before we get into our articles, you want to get to the Orient, and specifically China.
Yeah, well, let's talk some prophecy stuff here when it comes to China. You know, I think that we're watching things unfold right now, Greg, in the world that are answering questions for me and probably many of you prophecy buffs that are out there. If not, then hopefully this will encourage you and maybe start answering some of that as we talk about it. What I mean is what in the world do you do with China when it comes to end times prophecy? You know, when you read Ezekiel and the battle there with Ezekiel and all the last days things, the revived Roman Empire, for example, it would appear that the West is going to be dominant. Again, I do believe that you're going to see Islam, the Muslim countries, Arab countries involved. You're going to see the toes in Daniel's vision of iron and clay. I think the iron is going to be the West. I think the clay is going to be maybe some of those Muslim countries and others that don't really go along and that kind of idea as the formulation of these 10 kingdoms come together. But the question has been for me for really almost since I've been a Christian, you know, looking at prophecy is, what about China? Because China just doesn't seem to show up anywhere. About the closest you get to the possibility of seeing China is at Armageddon. You know, there's the possibility of those from what they call the area of Sin, S-I-N, you know, that some believe that's an ancient name for China. And there's some prophecies in the Old Testament that they believe brings that in. Again, there have been some things that I think erroneously were mentioned, where people talk about the 200 million man army. You know, and early on, I looked at things like that because you read there's a 200 million man army that's coming from the east, and you go, well, maybe that's China because they have so many people and And they say they can man a 200 million man army and all that. But the problem is it doesn't line up with scripture, because really what it shows us is that's demonic. Those are demonic forces that are behind all the people that are coming. But the 200 million is these demons, because it talks about them, you know, with their fangs and their head, horses' heads and locusts. Right. And so it's a demonic thing. They're the ones that come up out of the heart of the earth. Anyway, with just getting back to the point, China is a major, major world power right now, along with, and you say major, not compared to us, but I'm talking about, you got Russia and China, probably, you know, after America and Israel. These are two of the, you know, the strongest powers in the world. And so you think, well, what's going to happen to China since they're not really mentioned in the end times process? I think we're getting the answer to that right now. China, I believe, is going to become insignificant. And I believe we're watching that happen prophetically with what's going on with President Trump around the world. And let me explain. You got China, again, getting their oil and their supplies mostly from, you know, huge areas, Venezuela.
And Iran.
And Iran. And now suddenly President Trump has taken over, in essence, Venezuela. Now they're going to be shipping their oil toward us, and he's going to have his own leadership that's in there, although they'll still be their own country. That tie to China has now been cut. We would say the pipeline to China has now been cut off. Somebody pulled that spigot and shut it down. Yeah. Then you got Iran right now. Well, Iran is still, you know, they're still shipping it out, but it won't be much longer. They're not going to be able to do that for very long. When that spigot gets cut off, you've got China that really, the way they've gotten where they are, they've stolen all of our technology. They haven't earned any of it. They've just stolen it. I mean, they may have come up with some of their own stuff, like humans do, but they've stolen so much technology from America because we lead the way in that, us and Israel. And so, but when that gets cut off, Greg, they're going to just decline. They're already, their economy already is fragile right now. I mean, they're fine China, and fine China breaks easily.
Mm.
So you're already seeing their economy's in a tough spot already. Yeah. And then now when we cut off the oil, you're going to see it drop even more. And I don't care how big your country is, how many people are there, and what your ambitions are. If you don't have the power to do something with it, whether by oil or by money or whatever the case might be, you're done. And so economically, they're already bad. Now they got hit double whammy with Venezuela and Iran soon. Is going to be on top of that. In addition to that, you've got the whole situation here where, again, it's going to make it harder for them to get our technology because, again, the walls are kind of closing in on them. And also, they realize now militarily, if they or anybody else ever thought they had a chance of overcoming us, they realize now they don't. And those that would say, well, wait a minute, they could still use nuclear weapons. Of course they could. Anybody that has them could use them.
And that's just mutually assured destruction.
But here's
what
would happen. They would no longer exist.
Yeah.
If they used nuclear weapons, they would no longer exist. They would be nuked by us multifold, and we'd all go under. And maybe some of us would live if we hit them harder and faster. I don't know. But the point is, they're not going to do that. So now I don't think you're even going to see China move on Taiwan. That they've been wanting to get Taiwan and say, that's our territory, we want it back. And, of course, that's where the major chips are made for the computers. That's a major hub of technology in the world. So we have a stake in that and protecting that. They already have plans there to destroy everything. If China was to move on them, they would pull a bunch of switches and destroy all their technology there because they don't want China to get a hold of it.
Mm.
So that's already in place. However, I don't think China's going to move now. If China wanted to move, and they should have done it while President Biden was in, because he wouldn't have done anything. But now they don't know. President Trump probably would do something. And so, you know, he may not. He may say that's not worth war with China. I don't know. But they don't know that either. And so here's the bottom line. I don't think you're going to see them try to take Taiwan now, which keeps them weaker technologically, not getting hold of that technology and their land back, which they said their land, or the land. It's not their land anymore, but the land. And all the other. So you combine all this, combine their oil now being depleted, having to pay full price for the oil rather than the discounts they were getting from Iran and Venezuela. Now they're seeing the power of the U.S. military. I mean, who's going to go up against that and think they have a chance? The technology is just, it's just ridiculous. I mean, now even with some of this new technology, Greg, that we have, they can see through the mountains. The reason we're finding some of those underground things is they can see through the mountains underground now and see them by radar and other things. You can't, there's nowhere to hide. So we're leading the world
wow.
in that.
Yeah.
And so the bottom line is China, I think, is now on the process of becoming an insignificant nation in the world. They will still exist, I believe. I don't think they're going to be wiped out. They're still going to be there, but they are going to be insignificant. And I think that answers a lot of prophetic questions. Where's China in the last days? I'll tell you where they are. They're in China doing nothing. And that's exactly what is happening right now with all these processes we see around the globe. So again, I think this answers a huge prophetic question for us. And I wanted to take a moment to kind of update our listeners on that, because I think that's exactly what's happening. Be watching for China to continually become more and more insignificant. And I'll say one last thing before we jump into the articles. I know you're ready to start that music. America, something's got to happen with us as well. Now, it doesn't mean we have to be destroyed, some surprise nuclear attack. It doesn't mean that we have to even collapse economically. As a matter of fact, I suspect, Greg, that America, at least its generalness, is going to stay intact as the Antichrist takes over. And here's why I suspect that. When you look at what it says about the Antichrist, he's going to have such incredible military power that the world's going to say, who can go against the beast? Who can go against this military? Nobody. Well, they're saying that about America right now. So I think what's going to happen is somehow the American power base is going to stay in place with our military and all that, and it's going to be transferred over to the Antichrist. Now you say, how could that happen? Well, again, when we've seen more liberal presidents in, we've seen them wanting to put our military under even the UN. So when you imagine if somebody gets in that really hates, you know, President Trump and they hate going that direction politically, you what we've watched historically is they jump really far the other direction. And almost out of spite, if the wrong person got in, I could see that person saying, we're giving over all of our military to whoever. Just to kind of make a point, we're tired of being the world's superpower. So we're turning it over to Europe now, and Europe's going to control it. We're going to divide it between the nations, and we're going to make our military come under them. I can see that happening. And if they give the power all to one guy with this revived Roman Empire, he now has the military power of America under his control, as well as the rest of Europe under his control. And truly, who could go against the beast at that point? No one. So America has to be some way different than we are now. But I do not believe necessarily we're going to be annihilated. There may be something where we're taken down some way, but not annihilated, because I think our military and our military prowess and armory has got to be somehow in place and transferred over to the Antichrist.
Well, is scripture, if I understand scripture correctly, the one world government, or this revived Roman Empire, the second one world government in human history, will already be in place.
Yeah.
Before he comes on the scene.
Yes,
so the U.S. will be a part of that one world government.
I think so, somehow.
So somehow the ability to command a military globally already be there under the guise of the one world government.
That's a great point, Greg. As you just said that, what hit me was, you know what, if we're a part of this system, what it says is going to happen. It says that that conglomerate of nations is going to agree to give all their power to the dragon.
Yeah.
To the beast, the Antichrist.
Right.
So that would include our military. That might be the answer right there. We become one with all that. This guy has the answer to save the world, maybe after this catastrophic event that happens with Ezekiel 38 and 39 and Damascus being destroyed and Israel being, Russia and Iran being taken down totally. And so I think, and you put the right person in. Again, put somebody in there that's mad, that hates President Trump, and bring together the nations in some kind of agreement that really President Trump might even formulate before he leaves office, because he would be the leader of it at that point.
Kind of like what he's doing already with the Board of Peace.
Yeah,
right?
but let's say once he's no longer president, and let's say that's in place over the next 3 years, then the next president would be the chairman of the board. And if it's somebody very, very liberal that hates all that, and they just give everything over to this new leader rising up out of Europe, that right there could be your answer. And now the beast has the world's militaries at his fingertips. And the greatest world military in history, the U.S. military. That right there would be who in the world is going to go to war against the beast. And he'll be able to command the entire world to do what he wants them to do.
All right, as we head into the Battle of Ezekiel 38 and 39, we're going to look at some puzzle pieces here. Our first one comes to us by way of YNetNews.com, dated March 8th. Iran has powerful friends, but it's unlikely that Russia or China will offer direct military support.
What we just talked about. Nobody,
yes.
They don't dare, because they know what we can do. Again, they may be their buddies. It's almost like you might be somebody's buddy on the playground, but if you got two guys that are there that are giant and bigger than you, you're not going to be able to help your buddy much. It's going to be, let's be quiet and keep from getting beat up and get out of here. I think that's what's happening right now. China and Russia, they don't want to get beat up any more than they are. Since the war began, it says, on Saturday, both Beijing and Moscow have voiced strong support for Tehran. China condemned the killing of Iran's supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei is how they say it, and has issued several statements expressing friendship and solidarity with Iran. Russia's foreign ministry, meanwhile, said that the only way to prevent the region from descending into instability is to stop the aggression of the United States and Israel, which it's the only way to keep it in order. Anyway, still analysts say neither country is likely to move beyond rhetoric or offer Iran any direct military support. China is likely analyzing the strategic and political conditions on the ground and has no intention of tying itself to a sinking ship or a collapsing regime, explained Professor Yoram Evrom, of the Department of Asian Studies at the Bar-Ilan University. This is not part of China's DNA. According to Evron, although China and Iran have been partners for many years, they are not allies in the deepest sense of the term. As a result, China is unlikely to sacrifice its own interests to support a regime that acts illogically and is engaged in self-destruction. So, I mean, I hear what he's saying. He's using a logical argument. They're saying they don't want to step in because they see Iran being illogical and they're going to lose anyway. There's probably a big factor in that, but I would go on beyond what Evron says, because I think when you think of what Evron, you got to think of Chevron. And I think part of the oil situation here for them is they would still want to get involved to get their oil supplies. They're not, but so I think they would be more involved. If I think the reason they're not getting involved is not just because they're Iran's illogical, but I think they're going because they need the oil. I think what they're thinking is we can't defeat America. And if we get in a war with America and something happens there, we're in big trouble and their economy is already bad and all these other things. So I think there's a mixture of things, but I think there's more going on here than what this Professor Evron is even saying.
All right. Our next article comes from the Times of Israel, dated March 8th. Iran names Khamenei. I've heard it three ways so far. Names his shadowy headline son. Is that Motaba? Would the J be silent?
Yeah. Motaba. I try to hear them on the news how they're saying it. I can't even hear how they're saying it. So I don't know that I'm saying it right either.
Okay, I'm thinking the J might be silent, but who knows? Anyway, it's Khamenei's son is the new supreme leader. So,
yes.
There's a debate on how well is this guy?
Yes.
Didn't he get hit?
Well, that's the thing. Reports have come out that he did get hit already and that he lost a leg and for a while was in a coma and came out of the coma. And now, again, they said he released a statement yesterday that they read on CNN and of course, the Iranian. You know,
and other Iranian news outlets, yes.
Yes. But and who knows if he really did or if he, you know, why didn't he show himself? So he's certainly not doing well. And he's not going to last long. I think he's going to be taken out if they're, you know, poor guy, if he got blown up now, lost a leg, he's about to get blown up again, I think. So he's not going to live long. But the Iran's ruling clerics on Sunday appointed their slain leader's son of Khamenei as the country's new supreme leader, after the U.S. called him unacceptable and Israeli vowed to kill whomever the Islamic Republic appointed. The Assembly of Experts convened virtually to choose Iran's next supreme leader 9 days after the U.S. and Israeli launched a bombing campaign on the Islamic Republic with an Israeli strike killing the Ayatollah, triggering Iranian missiles and drone strikes on Israel and the region. Again, Khamenei's mother, the son's mother, his wife, and son were reportedly also killed. His whole family was taken out.
Wow.
And officials believe that he himself was wounded after being targeted in the strike last week. The 56-year-old son of the Ayatollah was appointed and introduced as the third leader of the sacred system of the Islamic Republic of Iran based on the decisive vote of the respective representatives. What's interesting, Greg, is he doesn't even meet the requirements to be an Ayatollah.
Interesting.
Yeah, you have to be a certain level cleric. He doesn't reach it, but because he's their son, they kind of put a bypass on it. And plus, when you don't have anybody to pick from,
I was going to say the pickings are slim.
Yeah, everybody's on the who's injured
in line?
Roster. Yeah, who can come in to quarter? We're like fifth string here.
We're
sixth
drawing
string.
Straws.
Yep, we're bringing back these old guys.
Yes,
they look like they did last year.
Yes.
You know, it's like they could see Mark get in there. Anyway, sources familiar with the matter said that his close ties with the IRGC, that's Khamenei's son, have added leverage again because they considered him important as his father's gatekeeper. While they're announcing him, the people were chanting from their windows again their death to Mojtaba from their windows in Tehran. and those neighborhoods. So the people, again, they don't like the people there want them all
they
out
want,
of
they
there.
Want, yeah, they want a whole new government.
Yeah, you've got your radical group that's still in there that's wanting them to be a part and to go. To be a part of it, but the people as a whole, I think, want them gone, and I think you're going to see that they're going to be gone.
Yeah. All right. The Times of Israel, dated March 10th, is reporting that Trump and Putin are talking of war and peace as the U.S. weighs easing Russian oil sanctions.
Yeah, this is interesting because Russia has a lot of tankers out there in the ocean. They can't get anywhere because they're blocked.
Yeah.
And the president's looking at oil prices and his legacy. And so he's going, you know what? Let's let you go and deliver that oil because that'll help the prices. And it kind of maybe will ease some tension between America and Russia. So there is some diplomacy maybe going on. But that's what's happening here, you know, to a degree here. It says Donald Trump and the Russian counterpart of Vladimir Putin discussed on Monday the war in Iran and prospects for peace in Ukraine just hours after the Kremlin chief warned that the global energy, I'm sorry, the Kremlin chief warned that the global energy crisis threatened the world economy. The U.S. and Israeli attack on Iran triggered the biggest spike in oil prices since the turmoil following Russia's 2022 invasion of Ukraine as Gulf producers reduced output after the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. The Kremlin said that Trump called Putin in the leader's first telephone call this year, and they discussed Russian ideas for a speedy end of the conflict in Iran, the military situation in Ukraine, and the impact of Venezuela on the global oil market. I said, you could be more helpful by getting Ukraine-Russia war over with, Trump said. That would be helpful.
Yes, it would.
And the call came within hours of Putin's remarks that the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran had triggered a global energy crisis, while cautioning that oil production dependent on transport through the Strait of Hormuz could soon come to a halt. Putin said Russia, the world's second largest oil exporter and holder of its biggest natural gas reserves, was ready to work again with European customers if they wanted to return to long-term cooperation. So there's things going on politically and strategically with Russia and the oil and prices. But it's interesting because, again, he called Russia the largest gas reserves. It was my understanding, now maybe because they haven't tapped into them fully yet, but it was my understanding that the Leviathan gas reserves they found off of the coast of Israel was the largest in the world. Now, maybe it's one of the largest single deposits in the world. Maybe I'd have to double check and
that
see.
That could be.
And see why I'm thinking that. Yeah, because I when I read that, I was like, wait a minute. I think that Israel now definitely has competition with them if they haven't surpassed.
And a question for another day in another show and not ours is that how on earth did we not secure the Strait of Hormuz, and militarily lock that thing down as we were going in Iran.
Here's the thing. Look, they planned. This is where there's some fake news out there, Greg.
Okay.
I'm saying we didn't plan. Here's the bottom line. There's only so much you can lock down on the Strait of Hormuz.
Okay.
But they had a full plan in place. They planned all that out before the war even started.
Okay.
They said, here's what's going to happen. Here's what they're going to do.
I thought as much, but that makes it sound like...
No.
Fake news.
Yeah, they're talking points by the more liberal side trying to say, look, he wasn't prepared. That's nonsense. There was a very specific plan in place, and they're enacting it right now. It's just that it's a process that has to unfold.
Okay. All right, as we come back to America, we're going to visit Fox News for an article dated March 8th that says that the New York Police Department confirms an object thrown at protesters, near Gracie Mansion in Manhattan was an IED.
Yeah, yeah. Again, this is interesting because, you know, when it first came out, CNN was trying to say, hey, this is, it was some teenagers
got roasted over that.
Yeah,
yes.
It was pretty bad. But again, the officials have confirmed that a device ignited and thrown during the protest near Gracie Mansion on Saturday was an IED capable of causing serious injury or death. The bomb squad has conducted a preliminary analysis of a device that was ignited and deployed at a protest yesterday and has determined that it is not a hoax device or a smoke bomb. It is, in fact, an improvised implosive device that could have caused serious injury or death. Authorities are continuing to analyze a second device recovered at the scene. Police arrested Amir Balot and Ibrahim Kayumi at the scene. Both remain in custody. Three federal law enforcement sources told Fox News the two suspects are believed to be U.S. citizens. The incident unfolded during dueling demonstrations Saturday morning near the East End Avenue, just steps from Gracie Mansion and the official residence of New York City Mayor Zoran Mamdani. So, yeah, again, this is where, and Greg, and just for a moment, we need to talk about this. Here's what's happened. I've been saying for a while, because of the open borders, that we're going to see America's going to become a home front for terrorist attacks just like the Middle East. The things we see and have seen over the years in the Middle East, they're going to be coming here. Well, they're here. We had two yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them, Islamic terrorist attacks yesterday.
And we'll talk about one later.
And this is the third one. This one happened first, and then two more that happened yesterday. I hate to say this, and I'm not trying to make anybody nervous or afraid, but you're going to see more and more of this now that the borders were just open. And I'm not. This is not to make a political statement about the borders. I'm just saying the fact is, when the doors open, anybody can walk in the house. And the problem is, a lot of people we didn't want walking in our house have walked in. When the doors should have been locked, they were open, and now we've got to deal with it. And they're just coming out at the right time that they feel. And there's going to be more of this. And I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, some even suicide bombs like inside cafes, restaurants, the kind of thing that happened in the Middle East. I think this is the beginning of it happening here. But I think you're going to see it more and more. And it does concern me because, we've opened that door up and now we have to deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, there was a report of radio signals coming out of somewhere in Europe.
Right.
That was broadcasting a series of indiscriminate numbers.
Yep.
And that some believe that is code. If you've got the decoder, that's a transmission out to sleeper cells to wake those sleeper cells up.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of things going on. I mean, even there in New York City, Mom Donnie, you know, laying out the Persian rugs there in City Hall, and they're squatting on the floor praying and doing all that. I mean, there's a lot of everything that you said that you talked about before the election that would end up happening as a result of this is coming to pass.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't take a prophet to figure that out. There's nothing. It's just the bottom line is that it has to do with just knowing the way that these guys operate.
Yeah.
Once you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. And I think that's what we see happening, Greg. They're moving in and they're taking territory.
That's Pastor Mark Kirk, who is helping us understand the signs of the times. It's our weekly review of Bible prophecies in the world's news on WIAM-LP Knoxville. We are a weekly radio broadcast that will become podcast episode number 406, which is easier to understand than why protesters protest the killing of a leader who killed protesters for protesting. And now,
you've got mail.
We have one question this week, Pastor Mark, and it's a good one. This comes from Aaron. Enjoying Signs of the Times in Maryville, wants to know about the tetrad moons. He says, Genesis 1:14 says, the sun, moon, and stars were given for signs and seasons, and Scripture also mentions the moon turning to blood before the day of the Lord. When I started looking into the lunar tetrads, four total lunar eclipses in a row, it seems like they've become more frequent over time. Two in the first millennium, three in the second, and eight expected in the third. Several have also fallen on Passover and the Feast of Tabernacles, and some occurred around significant moments in Israel's history. With the next tetrad around 2032 to 2033, which is also near the 2,000-year mark since Jesus' resurrection, how should Christians think about these astronomical patterns? Are they meaningful prophetic signs or simply natural cycles that sometimes line up with biblical dates?
Yeah, it's a great question, Aaron. And I've watched these things some over the years. I hear about them. I hadn't paid too much attention, but I watch it and see, okay, what's going on here? And I know these things have been announced and looked at, and they do oftentimes line up with major prophetic events or not prophetic things happening now, but in the past or timing, such as Passovers and things like that. But here's the issue that I have is nothing ever happens. It just lines up, but then nothing happens. The last big one, you know, we had the blood moons, and I know that even there were several people, even well known. I don't need to name names, but well known people came out and said, "Hey, this is important, significant. Be watching for something to happen, whatever." And nothing happened. So I guess the way I look at it is, God does say He uses the sun and moon for signs and seasons. He does, but I've never seen anything significant or really at all happen on these blood moons. I just see them announced and everybody gets excited and then nothing happens. So up to this point, all I can say, Aaron, is maybe God will start using them in some way that is more significant. But up to this point, if you go back and look at these, again, recent ones, there's nothing prophetically that happened that I can see. Now, maybe there's something behind the scenes I don't know. Maybe there's something God's doing that he's not showing us. But I can't point to anything and say, okay, yeah, something major happened. So I guess I think the thing to do is, look, just keep your eye on it, kind of watch it, see what happens. If God starts using it in a more significant way, we'll be aware. But at this point, I don't think I would overreact to the blood moons and things like that, just because I've never seen anything really happen connected to them in recent times. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Aaron, thanks for your question. If you've got a question like Aaron, or maybe that question that Aaron just gave us stirs a question in your mind, then what you do is just go to our website at thewaymedia.net. Just click Signs of the Times, and you'll see where you can ask Pastor Mark your prophecy question, or read our frequently asked questions. We might already be able to answer your question online. All right, as we roll on this episode, we'll roll into some growing anti-Semitism. This is from Israel 365 News. This kind of dovetails into what we were talking about before the listener question. Mamdani's imam prayed for the killing of infidels.
Yeah, this is, you know, what a lot of people don't want to hear and don't want to think about is the real motive behind committed Islam. And right. I talk about committed and non-committed. Non-committed Islam is not really something to worry about so much. They don't really take it seriously. They don't really live by the Quran. But for the committed Islamist, the person that really takes it serious, I would say a true disciple that lives by the Quran, there are true concerns here, because it does teach killing the unbeliever, either taxing them if they won't go along, or putting them to death, and the eventual putting to death or subjugating. The ultimate goal is subjugate them. If they won't submit, you can tax them or you can kill them. And so it's a part of Islam that people don't like to talk about. You can't avoid it. It's just, there it is. I mean, I think the difference in you know, people try to compare Islam to the Old Testament and say, well, look, in the Old Testament, they put people to death. The difference in Islam and the Old Testament is Jesus came bringing grace and now died on the cross and paid for the law. And so there's the mercy and grace for all to be saved and all to repent and all to enter the kingdom. There is no grace savior in Islam. It's just still the law, death, kill the infidel. And I'm not saying the Old Testament was that. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, that's what he believes. That's what Mamdani, his dad, is a very committed Muslim. Mamdani's a committed Muslim, and they believe that everyone should be subjugated to Islam, and then if you don't submit to it, you either pay higher taxes or you're put to death. And so he goes to a service there where they're doing Ramadan, and of course they pray for the infidels to be put to death. And I mean, that's what he believes. That's us. Basically, you and I, we're the ones to be put to death.
Yeah.
But listen to what it says. New York City Mayor Mamdani sat in the Islamic Center in Queens during Friday's prayers on the first day of Ramadan. The imam led us a supplication in Arabic invoking the Mahdi. By the way, the Mahdi is their savior. That's like our Jesus Christ. They have the Mahdi they believe is going to save the world and take over rather than Jesus. And here's the translation of the words from Arabic into English. He said this: through your hands comes the relief for the believers, that is in Islam, and the killing of infidels by your sword. And that's everybody that doesn't believe in Islam. Mamdani remained in the room for the full prayer. The center draws funding through this foundation, the Alavi Foundation, which the U.S. federal courts and the Departments of Justice identified rulings as a front for the Iranian government channeling money to the bank Meli under sanctions. Mamdani's stance on Israel is unmistakable. He joined the Democratic Socialists of America in 2017 for its pro-Palestinian positions. He co-sponsored the 2023 Not on Our Dime bill to revoke tax-exempt status from charities supporting Israel settlements. And on October 24th, he posted on X, Israel is committing genocide, which again, we know is now nonsense, and pretty much everybody knows that now other than the ultra-left. In a 2025 debate, he rejected Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state. Jewish voters in New York City still get this. Now, again, those are stances against the Jews.
Yeah.
Jewish voters in New York City still gave him substantial backing. Exit polls showed him taking 31 to 33% of the Jewish vote overall. Almost one in three, Greg, voted for him, even though he said, I hate you and we want to kill you. And it's like, okay, I'm going to vote for you anyway. Now you know why God called them a stiff-necked people, which I am today. I've got a stiff neck. This issue I got going on, but I mean,
I spared you the joke at the beginning on that.
But you know, God called. God says, "Look, the point is, why are you fighting? Why are you fighting against me and supporting my enemies?" God said to the nation of Israel, numerous times they've done that, and now we see them the unsaved unsaved Jews again supporting the enemies of God and their own enemies. They're standing with their own enemies and fighting with them.
So we can translate a stiff-necked people into a rebellious, prideful people. Can we say that?
I would say for sure, yes.
Okay, so with that, I guess Pastor Mark, can spiritual blindness be a component of that?
Oh, it is for sure.
Because if you've got somebody who's literally saying to your face, I don't like you, and I don't like those that support you, and I'm going to remove tax-exempt status for those. And when he was just a candidate or when he was whatever, and the Jews don't see that.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you attribute that to if it's not some sort of spiritual blindness to it or thinking we're just going to be so nice to him that he's just going to want to be nice to us?
Yeah, I think if there's a spiritual blindness, no doubt, Greg. And once the spiritual blindness sets in, then some of those, you got people that are spiritually blind, but are still generally humble. But then you got spiritual blindness and people that really are just, they become very, very, very hardened and very, very arrogant. And they just become, you know, you can't even reason with them. And I think sometimes it's a hatred of God. I think sometimes it's trying to fit in and get people to like you. But I mean, I'll give you an example. Look at this. You've got those marching in the streets with the Palestinians flag saying, kill all the Jews, kill all the Jews, kill all the Jews. And you got Jews out there marching with them. And they're saying, yeah, you know, we believe that Israel is wrong and doing wrong over there. So we're saying the action be taken against them as well. And you're going, guys, these are your own people. Look, maybe Israel's doing wrong, but if you don't stand with your own family, and then say, guys, let's work this out. You get with them. Tell them how they're doing it wrong and work it out, but don't fight against them. You know, a house divided cannot stand. You're fighting against yourself. So it's amazing to me to see how you'll see, you know, people do that. And I think sometimes there seems to be this kind of thing where certain people will go along with certain movements because they feel like somehow they're being more equal and more fair, when even if the movement's terrible, but they want to go along to show how fair they are, how equal they are, how, you know, whatever the case might be. I mean, I remember, again, when President Obama was running, there was this whole thing, and they talk about it, the campaign, they'll talk about it today. There was a large number of the white community in America that didn't vote based on politics. They literally voted for him because they didn't want anybody to think they were racist. And it's almost like, we're going to show you that we're not racist by doing that. and again, you know, I think he would have won without that, because he had the popular, you know, the people liked him and he would have won. But there's almost kind of like this guilt that comes in with certain people where they'll stand with certain things just because they don't want to be associated with anybody that's doing something that they think might be wrong. I think that can even come into play here with some of the Jewish community and these kind of things. They think, well, you know, they're unsaved. They can't see from God's standpoint. And they're like anti-war. And they're going, yeah, well, Israel is doing wrong by dropping bombs over here. So we're going to march with you guys. But they don't realize they're marching with those that want to kill them. And if the people marching had the power, they'd turn on them and wipe them out right there. But they don't have the power, so they don't. It's like, it's like watching the trans community and the gay community standing with, you know, the Islamic community, you know, in these battles, in these wars, you know, the Palestinians.
Right.
Whereas if they were over there in those countries, Greg, they would kill them.
Yes.
They would put them to death. It's just a fact.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Our next article comes from Fox News. Suspect dead after ramming vehicle into a Michigan synagogue. This just happened, I think, yesterday. Right? Thursday.
It was. There were actually two that happened yesterday. Yes. And this
one was the synagogue. The other one was at Old Dominion.
That's right.
Right. Which we don't have an article on because I don't think that was necessarily tied to Jewish hate.
Well, again.
Or at least I don't have the article on it.
We know that he was a radical Muslim now.
Yes. Now that part, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm certain it was tied to what's going on with America and Iran.
Yes.
It's going to be what's going to come out. But either way, this one, the emergency medical teams at Henry Ford West Bloomfield Hospital and Henry Ford Province and Novi Hospital are currently caring for 8 first responders following this afternoon's incident at Temple Israel, the hospital system said in a statement. Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard said earlier that one person was confirmed injured, a security guard who was struck by the suspect's truck. Bouchard also noted that heavy smoke filled the synagogue hallway, forcing officers to enter the building wearing gas masks, raising the possibility some responders were treated for smoke inhalation. The FBI said it is investigating the attack at Temple Israel in West Bloomfield, Michigan, as a targeted act of violence against the Jewish community. I can confirm, and I quote, I can confirm that we are leading the investigation right now as a targeted act of violence against the Jewish community. Authorities said one suspect was involved and is now deceased, and confirmed no congregants or children were killed in the attack. This is truly the grace of God, what happened here, because he drove into the building, got out with a gun and started shooting, and they were killed him before he could kill anybody. The guy that got hit was a security guard. When the car went in there, he's going to be okay. I mean, it's a miracle. The only one that died was the guy going in to kill people. This could have been really bad, Greg. There could have been a lot of people dead, and God really, I think, intervened to protect them here, protected them. But as I said, this is one of those things where we're going to see more and more of these. Like, we don't have the Old Dominion listed in our articles, but that was also a radical Islamic attack.
And an ROTC student took him down.
Yeah, it's going to be more and more of this. And so, again, they're spending so much money. They said millions are being spent there at this particular synagogue. Apparently, it's the largest Reform synagogue in the nation, maybe the world, but in the nation. And so they spend lots of money, but they were saying, you know, we're glad we had it because they protected everyone's lives. But it's only going to get worse. This is just the beginning, I fear.
All right, we've got a couple of articles in our pestilence, plagues, disasters, and corruption category this week. Our first one comes from Fox News, dated March 6th. That's one of the towns listed as my hometown that I grew up in. A highly contagious virus with no treatment spreading rapidly through Western state.
Yeah, this is interesting because, Greg, you know, again, there's two things I want to point out. Matthew 24 says there'll be more of these plagues popping up in the last days. But also, it's interesting to me because one of the warnings that we got from some virologists when the COVID thing broke out, they said, don't give everybody in the world a shot at the same time. Okay, if you're going to do this thing, do it by nations and segments and give some time between. Because he said, well, the way the body works is that if you give everybody one thing at the same time, he said, it'll build up antibodies for that one thing together. But the problem is viruses mutate into something different. So now you've got all these things that are geared up for this. It mutates and it can't now change to catch the new things that come up from it, because it can't. What'll happen is they mutate. You'll have different people that catch it, and it'll create a new antibody. It mutates a new antibody, so that you have to have no antibodies at all to the old for a new one to develop for the new one. But if everybody gets it at once, nobody can fight it. So I'm not saying that's what's happening here. But again, the bottom line is that this could be the result, and we may start seeing more of this because the entire world took the shot at one time and built up these antibodies. When they mutate, the body can't rebuild to fight against the others because it's already used its power to mutate for that one. So apparently the way the body works, you got to do it in segments, so that's why in a city, something will come in, a virus will come in, certain people get it, and then they build up antibodies, and then everybody that has that antibody is protected from the old one, but the old one dies out because it can't find a host, and then it mutates to something else. Well, then the new people create new immunities for it. What he's saying is that some of them, these virologists said, is that it prevents new immunity to new virus transformations. So mutations. So again, I'm not saying that's it, but either way, we're now seeing, the Bible tells us in Matthew 24, we're going to see more of this in the last days. Well, wastewater scan data show that the human metapneumovirus, or HMPV, is rampant in Northern California. The virus peaked sharply in January and remains elevated in early March, although the seasonal winter wave is now tapering. HMPV is on the same viral family as respiratory virus, as RSV, and was first discovered in 2001, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It is a single-stranded RNA virus like flu and COVID, Dr. Mark Siegel, a Fox News senior medical analyst, told Fox News Digital. The virus is increasing not only in the West, but also around the country. The wastewater data also show that HMPV is rising sharply in the Midwest and Northwest. The most common symptoms of the virus in healthy children and adults include cough, fever, nasal congestion, shortness of breath, per the CDC. Now, again, I don't think this is dangerous. Again, it doesn't seem to be killing people. Anybody, of course, that's old and weak could die from any illness. So, again, there may be some deaths from it in that way. But it doesn't seem to be something that's taking lives, but it is something to be concerned about just simply because it's new viruses that our body can't seem to fight, or new conditions, whatever it is. And again, if it is a result of mass vaccinating the world at one time, if that virologist that was really pushing that, and it was more than one, but the one that was really pushing it, that was a well-known virologist, if indeed he was correct, this is going to only be one of many that will pop up from giving everybody the same shot at the same time. And hopefully, if there's something that ever happens like that, they'll spread it out and won't do it all as one big major thing. But either way, it is what it is at this point.
All right, our next article comes from AccuWeather.com. Louisiana rocked by four earthquakes days after the strongest quake in decades. And this article here is dated March 5th. There might even be more updated info available.
Yes. Well, a magnitude 4.9 earthquake rattled Louisiana on the morning of March 5th, striking 36 miles southeast of Shreveport, Louisiana, according to the USGS. Preliminarily, it is the biggest earthquake recorded in their state's history. That's pretty amazing.
That is.
We don't get a lot of earthquakes on this side of the country.
And no.
So 4.9. What did we have? Was it a 4.3 we had about 6 months ago or a year ago? The one we had that was pretty big.
That on the Saturday?
It was like a 4.something, one, two, or three.
That was like south in Teleco or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty big. Either way, I've never felt anything like that, but either way, we don't have things like that typically that big, but I think we've had some bigger historically. They haven't. On Monday, March 9th, four more earthquakes were recorded near Edgefield, Louisiana, southeast of Shreveport, ranging from a magnitude 3.1 to a 4.0, according to the USGS. Earthquakes above a magnitude 4 are rare in Louisiana. Since early December, northwestern Louisiana has recorded 8 earthquakes, ranging from 2.6 to 3.1. The 4.9 is the strongest quake on land in two decades. Two strong earthquakes were recorded offshore in the Gulf with a magnitude 5.3 on Grand Island in 2006 and 4.9 in 78. Additionally, on May 17, 2012, a magnitude 4.8 struck Timpson, Texas. The epicenter of the 2012 tremor was about 57 miles west of the one that was recorded on Thursday morning. So now, why is this significant? Again, I don't think any major damage was done. Here's why it's significant. These are new. These are new quakes that are larger than normal. They have had quakes, hadn't had them in a long time, but these are larger. Remember, Jesus said you're going to see more and more earthquakes in the last days, like a woman in birth pangs as we're working toward the last days. And so what we're watching for is not just earthquakes, because earthquakes are always there. What we're watching for are earthquakes that are different than what we've seen in the past, and that is greater in frequency, maybe in unusual places, and greater in power. That's exactly what's happening in Louisiana. They don't typically get earthquakes. Now they got a cluster of four in a short amount of time, one breaking a record on land for the largest they've ever had. So this is new activity that is not in recorded history. That's the kind of stuff we pay attention to when we think about contractions in the last days. And so I find this very intriguing from a prophetic standpoint.
All right, we've got some very interesting news technologically to talk about this week. Our first one comes from the Wall Street Journal. How AI is turbocharging the war in Iran.
Yeah, this is pretty amazing when you think about what AI can do, Greg. And even some of the article bears that out, because it is we already had precision military equipment. But now using AI, it just takes it to the next level. Now, what we've got to remember is these other countries have AI as well. So we've got to stay ahead of their AI. But the U.S. and Israeli attacks on Iran have unfolded at unprecedented speed and precision thanks to months of planning, a massive assemblage of military force and cutting-edge weapon never before deployed on this scale, artificial intelligence. AI tools are helping gather intelligence, pick targets, plan bombing missions and assets, battle damage at speeds not previously possible. AI helps commanders manage supplies of everything from ammunition to spare parts and lets them choose the best weapon for each objective. Before Israeli jet fighters launched ballistic missiles that killed Iran's supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, at his residence a week ago, launching the current region of war, Israeli intelligence services had for years been monitoring hacked Tehran traffic cameras and eavesdropping on the senior officials' communications. We talked about that last week. increasingly relying on AI to sift through the flood of intercepts. So you can get AI to get in to watch all the cameras and see when he comes through and then just what's his timing. And then it puts it together for you. This is the time he travels through here and where he goes. Mm. The use of AI in the campaign against Iran follows years of work by the Pentagon and lessons learned from other militaries. Ukraine, with U.S. help, increasingly relies on AI in its war against Russia. Israel has tapped AI in conflicts at least since the October 2023 Hamas attack. So, again, AI has been used in amazing ways in this battle. It's going to be used in more amazing ways in the future. And, you know, it's interesting, Greg, as I was reading about some of the things that's happening even in Ukraine. We don't have an article on that, but I'm going to mention it real quick while we're here.
Okay, sure.
For some reason, Ukraine is like one of the leaders in AI and robotic technology, which I find interesting. Ukraine, well, we've been pouring millions and we've been giving and working with them. We're talking about some of their, they've got some military AI robots that they say can actually be used to protect our borders. And I'm going, why are we getting this from Ukraine? You know, when I saw this stuff happening with Ukraine, I started thinking, there's more going on with Ukraine than meets the eye. There's more under the surface. There's something happening in Ukraine is why they're wanting to protect it so much, and all the Russia stuff and all the money we've poured into it, more than we know. And now we're seeing like some amazing technology. Matter of fact, even the way their drone swarms work, we're getting some stuff from Ukraine on how to do that. Okay, the U.S. getting from Ukraine, what's going on? There's technology coming out of there that I'm sure we funded and that we have worked on in there, but it's like something's happening. And so it just, again, there's going to be a lot of AI technology. Keep your eye on Ukraine, because I'm reading some articles that catch me off guard about technology coming out of that. I'm like, wait a minute, how are they getting this? And we're the leader in the world technologically.
I don't know if it was within the last year or last couple of years. Remember when Ukraine got in and took out a bunch of Russia's long-range bombers? And they did that with drones.
Yeah, they use these drone swarms. That's a technology they've either perfected and because they thought they had to, or I don't know, there's something else.
Yeah. I mean, this is very interesting.
It is. Even seeing the article today about the robots that are AI driven and actually now can fight and use border protection. I'm like, Ukraine? It's just keep your eye on that. I don't have an answer for it, but there's something weird going on there.
Yeah. All right. Our next article comes from people.com. This is dated March 7th. A woman declared legally blind at age 12 receives a free pair of life-changing AI glasses to help her navigate the world now at age 33.
Yeah, amazing. You know, we talked about this last week, Greg. Remember in our technology talk about putting the new lenses in, eyes in, that could look to the core of your brain where they're taking blind people and making them see. Well, this is step one. This is now where what happens is these AI glasses, they tell you everything that's going on, and they see for you by your ears. And
amazing.
For people that are used to using their senses other than their eyes, this is huge for them. This blind woman in Florida received the life-changing technology, AI glasses, that can describe the world to her. Jordan Reich, 33, of Tampa, was first diagnosed with a genetic condition called retinitis pigmentosa when she was just 7 years old. Reich, who was declared legally blind when she was 12, said that she currently has about 5% of her vision left. I mean, that's nothing. It says she can see objects, large objects, and a little bit of light, and that's about it.
That's about it. Wow.
However, she recently received a pair of Ray-Ban AI Wayfarers. Well, Ray-Ban Wayfarers, I mean, she's looking good, right?
And she looks good, too. Yeah.
Through a pilot program called Dogs Incorporated. Because they work with Seeing Eye Dogs.
Oh, okay.
A Florida nonprofit that trains guide dogs and helps match them with visually impaired owners. The glasses work with Meta AI and a tiny imperceptible speaker to do things like describe objects and colors, as well as read signs, menus, and receipts, life-changing details for a visually impaired person.
Amazing.
It is. The glasses pair with the user's smartphone by Bluetooth for internet access, which is necessary for the glasses to fully function. And I quote, "I have a 2-inch stack of mail that I can't read," Reich says. "And now I can check the expiration date on milk." So she picks it up. It tells her the milk expires on this date. It tells her read things. It does all this for her.
She can go to a restaurant and have it read the menu for her.
Pretty excited.
Wow.
And she said, "I'm so excited." On the day she received them, she said, "I've been wanting this so long." And I think about now how many people out there that are blind that are going to want these glasses and have these glasses. And so hopefully they're going to be affordable. I don't know if the insurance is going to pay for them. But again, I believe this is just the first step moving into the longer term where you have this, where people are going to not need the glasses. They're going to be able to see without them. Now, this is where we'll get interesting, Greg, because we'll be watching for these articles too. Believe it or not, there are some blind people that don't want their sight. I know it sounds strange,
Especially if they were born that way.
Yes, because they say, you know what? I've learned to live this way. Yep. I don't want to mess up the apple cart here. Yep. I've learned to function. Leave me alone. We're fine. They don't want to go through the surgery or do whatever. I get it. But it's interesting to think that you wouldn't want sight. But again, I guess if you were born blind and raised blind and live that way, then again, I could see how it could be, you know, more convenient just to keep it the way that it is and not mess with it. But very interesting. But again, these glasses. Now, Greg, this goes in line. Remember, we talked about a year ago about the Meta glasses, and they had the Apple glasses that never came out.
Yes.
That were for people that can see. But what they do is they connect to your temple and your brain, and you can like connect to the internet. They can tell you the temperature, the white Bluetooth, again, your phone, temperature. They can do all these special things and get you, like, you know, where you're living life and all. But they also monitor all your emotions and your feelings, and they monitor those so they can tell what your emotions and feelings are by how you look and by your eyes and what you're looking at. Not a good thing. You don't want the government to know that or anybody else to have those that kind of information, especially if you live in North Korea, places like that.
Yes.
But either way, now those never came out. I don't know why. Maybe the technology wasn't perfected. Maybe it was a military government thing. They stopped it because who knows? I don't know why it stopped. But now we see this happening. It's going to get interesting as this new technology rolls out, Greg. I think we're about to see our world change radically. Some really cool ways, but also some scary ways.
Scary ways as well, yeah. All right, good news. This is from crosswalk.com, dated March 10th. Franklin Graham tells 90,000 in Peru, Jesus created you and he loves you.
Yeah, this is amazing to see what's happening. First of all, in Peru, we have some missionaries in Peru.
Yes, we do.
Jake and Raquel.
They're
in Peru, and there's more than one Calvary Chapel there in Peru as well. There's God's doing a great work in Peru, has been for many years, and so exciting to see how successful this outreach was there by Franklin Graham. It says the evangelist Franklin Graham delivered a powerful message of salvation and peace through Jesus Christ to nearly 90,000 Peruvians in Lima's National Stadium. This weekend, though it was a place of worship and proclamation, so it's normally their national stadium for events, but he was able to use it again for the crusade. They're saying it was an incredible two nights. Again, both nights combined, again, 90,000 people, Greg, that were reached by this. He says it was an incredible night. The one mentioned here, in the beautiful city of Lima, as 48,500 people came out to Esperanza Lima to hear the gospel. We give God all the glory for the thousands who made the most important decision of their lives tonight to turn from their sins and put their trust in Jesus. He's here in Lima tonight, Graham explained to the audience in applause. He's here for you. Graham urged those in attendance to look beyond religion and put their faith in Jesus Christ. Now, this is interesting here. Of course, he included everybody, but this the approach he made here, because it's a big Catholic population there in that area.
But he tamped it down.
But listen to what he said. The Catholic Church cannot save you. Being a Baptist cannot save you. And that's what saved him.
Yes.
Being a Pentecostal cannot save you, he said. There's nothing you can do to save yourself. There's no one who can save you, only Jesus Christ. That is a very, very shrewd statement, because, again, the Catholic Church teaches there is something you can do to save yourself. And so what he did was he let them know, first off the bat, the Catholic Church and anything you do can't save you. But to keep him from being attacked by all those there and shutting off their ears from listening, he included the Baptists and the Pentecostals, saying they can't save you either. So it kind of, like, you know, brings down the temperature and kind of evens the playing field. He says the two-night evangelistic event featured music by the Afters, Charity Gale, Christine DeClerio, and Jahaziel and the Jahaziel Band. Toward the end of Graham's message, each night, thousands of attendees walked to the field ready to begin a new life. One of them was Oscar Nunez, who said he boarded a bus to the stadium praying to God, saying, God, I'm looking for you. That's so neat. I'm coming here looking for you. And if you do that, you're going to find him.
Yeah.
I used to drink a lot. I used to sleep around. I lied a lot, he said, according to a story on the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association website. And I quote, God's been working wonderfully in my life. I don't drink anymore. I have a good life with my wife. I try to be on good terms with my family. He and his wife prayed to receive Christ. Isn't that great? I feel like God has heard all of my prayers, Corina Nunez said. I used to think that he didn't forgive me. But today the message has been clear. Jesus is my Savior. The Billy Graham Evangelistic Association held the event in partnership with area churches, which will now follow up with those who came forward for discipleship. Now, again, it's amazing to see. I know that Franklin Graham has not had the impact that Billy Graham had, but again, it's a different era. I don't know that God's pouring out his spirit as much as he was then, but he has been faithful. He has reached just tens of thousands, millions of people, and God is still using the Graham family. It's really amazing. You know, what God is doing with them and to see the work that he did. And Greg, this is such a great way to end our broadcast because even as Franklin Graham gave an opportunity then, I want to give our listeners an opportunity now. I know we have people that are listening that don't know the Lord. Maybe you stumbled onto this site, stumbled at streaming, whatever you got here by radio or by streaming. Maybe some friends told you about it. However God got you here, you didn't get here by accident. God has brought you here. And the Lord is speaking to you right now. Here's how you know. He's drawing you in. You can feel the Spirit of God saying, listen to this guy. He's speaking the truth. Here's what God wants you to know. Mankind is separated from God by sin. And the only way we can be reconnected to God is to have our sin paid for through the blood of someone who could pay for those sins. Man couldn't do it. It had to be God. So God came to the earth in human form. He died on a cross. And by his blood on that cross, God takes, the Father now, takes that blood as payment for man's sin. He resurrected 3 days later, and what the Bible tells us, if you will confess your sin to God, that you're a sinner, if you'll believe that that blood on the cross washes you clean of that sin, and if you ask Jesus to forgive you and be your Lord, he will forgive you, and you too will be resurrected with him to live for him forever in the kingdom of God. I encourage you, pray that prayer right now, and pray there, and call Calvary Chapel Knoxville if you want to speak to someone about the prayer you've made, but don't leave this broadcast without praying to receive Christ if God is moving in your heart.
Amen. Pastor Mark, thank you as always. And folks, thanks for listening. Thewaymedia.net, everything about our show and other content to keep you filled and directed into the world in life of Jesus Christ. And we invite you to come back next Friday at 1:30 as we continue to discuss and learn how the things happening in our world today point to God's Word as signs of the times.
WIAM LP Knox.